Hello and welcome to the Conversion Choreography Show. I'm Anna Iverson, a former figure skater and corporate refugee turned direct response copywriter who helps you create high converting marketing campaigns that turn lukewarm leads into obsessed mega fans. Join me as I walk you through the latest marketing strategies and persuasion techniques to help you make more sales and more impact in your online business. Ready to get started? Then let's dive in with the show. Hey, Anna here on the Conversion Choreography Show. So how many times have you come back from a holiday and set about the mundane task of clearing out your inbox? And then have you ever stopped to pay attention to how a few of those emails you actually feel compelled to read immediately or save for later? Maybe there's one from your best friend from uni, perhaps there's one from your mum reminding you about Auntie Jean's birthday, and maybe there are one or two marketing emails that sound intriguing enough to enjoy with your lunchtime ham sandwich. The rest gets sent straight to your e-trash. Now, the average human receives at least 15 marketing emails every single day, and most of those emails are either stuffy, boring, or just plain spamtastic. So it's really no wonder that the average email open rate is actually way below 20%. And that's because most marketing emails are instantly applied to the B pile. So if you're not sure what I mean by that, let me explain quickly. So legendary A-list copywriter Gary Halbert first came up with the idea of A-pile versus B-pile mail. Now, at the time, he was actually referring to physical mail that landed in your real-world letterbox, but the same principle applies to your email. So if you think about it, when you open up your inbox, the first thing you do is scope out your most important emails, and you do that by looking at who the email is from. So emails from clients, colleagues, friends, and family all go onto the A-pile. And these are the emails that you typically devour immediately, especially if you know one of them contains juicy gossip about who ran off with whose husband the other week. Or they could be the emails that you flag to pay attention to later. So whether you read them now or whether you read them later, these are the emails, the ones on your A pile, that will get read at some point that day. Now, your B pile consists of work emails that you've maybe CC'd on that probably don't require your attention, or they consist of emails from former friends that you've now blacklisted, or maybe that's just me, or marketing emails. Rarely will marketing emails ever make it onto the A pile. In fact, over 80% of cases, marketing emails go straight in the bin. But note that I said rarely and not never. And that's because sometimes an email marketer is able to write emails that are so compelling and so high value that they earn their place on your A pile. And these are the emails that make your heart do a little tap dance when they land in your inbox. What that means is, by sending great emails, the sender is able to achieve practically the same status as emails from friends and family. Now, the truth is that very few email marketers will ever achieve this coveted status. That's because most email marketers vomit a few lines of copy into their email marketing software without giving too much consideration for the way it might land in their readers' inboxes. Luckily, there are several techniques you can implement in your email copy to help you work your way onto the email A pile. And the result is that you can achieve higher open, click, and reply rates on every email you send, which is why I'm super excited to share these four ways to transform beige email copy into personality-packed inbox fodder your prospects can't wait to devour. So if you follow these simple strategies, you'll have the power to boost your email engagement and skyrocket your sales. So first up, you can write like you speak. Now, a few months into running my first business, I realized I was suffering from a major hangover from my days in corporate. And when you spend 50 hours a week working in a grey, suity environment, you kind of start to sound grey and suity. And there's something about corporate speak that makes everyone who ever worked in an office absorb all that corporate jargon and writing style by a process of osmosis. And once it's entered your brain and your bloodstream, it can really feel pretty impossible to shake. Trouble is, this is how most business owners end up writing. And that's partly because they believe that the only way for anyone to take them seriously is to sound like a pinstripe suit. And that might work when your work email is being monitored by the HR police, but in the world of online marketing, holding onto corporate speak is a bit like clinging onto a sinking ship. And like a sinking ship, the only way is down for your email open and click rates, which is why you really need to wave goodbye to corporate writing and relearn how to write like you speak. And I'm talking in real life, not like when you're in a meeting with the procurement officer and you put on your extra special professional corporate mask. Now, what amazes me is actually how hard it is to shake the corporate habit. And that's because we've been trained for decades by our teachers and bosses to write proper. We've been taught for years not to split our infinitives and never, ever, ever to start a sentence with the word and. And those lessons, because of the number of years we've had them drummed into our head, can be really difficult to unlearn, especially when you can hear the voice of Mrs. Painter shrieking in your ear each time you dangle a preposition. Now, luckily, it can be undone. It just takes a little bit of self-awareness and a willingness to practice writing in a way that feels completely different. And when you get into the flow and you start to find your style, you're going to find that your writing actually becomes a lot more fun. So if you can stomach the initial discomfort, I promise you, it's absolutely worth it. But you're probably wondering how exactly you go about writing like you speak. How do you figure out what you sound like and how to translate that into words? Well, the first thing to do is figure out what your real life personality is. And this might seem like a stupid thing to say, but actually, it's quite hard to define what your personality is. So if you're not sure who you really are, don't worry. The truth is, most of us aren't sure. Most of us walk through our lives having no idea how we come across to other people. So what I would suggest in this situation is to send an email to your friends and family or post on social media asking the people closest to you to describe you in 3 words or less. Are you funny, intelligent, sarcastic, witty, serious, warm, kind? It might feel a bit awkward asking the question, but actually I did this not too long ago and the results that I got back were, on the one hand, highly amusing because I had no idea the way that I was coming across, but actually quite heartwarming. The kind of feedback that I was getting back was actually really nice because in general, unless you have a load of trolls in your audience, people will respond to this kind of request really kindly. So don't worry that you're going to get back a load of feedback that you just don't want to hear. Now, these attributes will all come across in the way that you speak, which is why it's important to get a sense of how other people see you. And once you know who you are, and how you come across to other people, you can start to develop a tone of voice through the words that you choose in your copy. For example, if people describe you as someone who is calm and compassionate, it's unlikely that you're going to be somebody who drops F-bombs in your copy every 5 minutes. So the next thing you can do, once you've identified the kind of personality and tone that you want to come across with, you want to start reading your emails out loud. Listen to how your words sound and feel when you say them out loud. And if you find that you're stumbling on awkward phrases or you feel a bit robotic when you're reading your email, that's a sign that you've probably reverted back to corporate speak. And what you can also do if you want to take it even further is you can actually record yourself as you read your copy aloud. Now, this might feel a bit cringe, but actually it's really helpful because what you can do is you can play it back and you can actually listen to how it sounds and how it would come across to somebody else. And what you want to do is try and analyze whether the recording actually sounds like the way that you would speak in your natural voice. If yes, you've nailed it. If no, it's maybe time to go back and edit. And just try to pick out the sections where you're maybe coming across a bit stiff and overly professional and just tone the language down so it sounds a bit more conversational and a bit more casual. Okay, so the second thing that you can do to liven up beige email copy is to start creating visuals with your words. Now, when I first started writing email copy, I kept hearing other writers saying, show, don't tell. And I feel a bit dumb admitting this, given that I write for a living, but I actually had no idea what they were talking about, which is why I want to explain what it means in case you're feeling a bit confused about this like I was. Now, the reason why showing is really important and is much more impactful than just straight out handing people the information on a plate is because our brains process visuals 60,000 times faster than when they're looking at words on a page. In fact, people remember 80% of what they see versus just 20% of what they hear and 20% of what they read. Now, it's not always possible when you're marketing to create slide decks or videos. Sometimes you really do need to rely on your written words to get your message across, which means you're constantly fighting against your reader's cognitive limitations whenever you write an email. Now, luckily, there is a way that you can jump over that hurdle. And when you crack it, not only will your email copy be easier for your readers to digest, it will also be more memorable, and it's going to show off your quirks and your personality way more than if you use just plain vanilla text on a screen. And this is why showing and not telling is important. It's a way of expressing an idea in a way that conjures up images in your reader's mind. So imagine your email playing out a bit like a film reel inside your prospect's head, instead of them just scanning a bunch of letters and words on a screen or on a page. That's going to be so much more powerful than just words alone. So just to illustrate what I mean by this, let me give you a quick example. Here's the way that you'd write it if you were just telling. So Joe was finding it hard to write. He'd been struggling for hours. It's okay, it gets the message across clearly, but it's not very interesting and it doesn't create the visual. So if you were trying to show and not tell, here's how you could do it. Joe thumped his head on his desk. Boom, boom, boom. He'd already chewed through 5 pencils. A pile of paper snowballs was multiplying on the floor around his feet. But after 3 hours, 25 minutes and 42 seconds sitting in front of his screen, his Google Doc was so empty, it was laughing at him. Now, you can see the difference. Obviously, it's a lot longer, but as you're reading that, you can actually see poor Joe sitting at his desk, struggling to write, and you can see what his surroundings look like that demonstrate how much he was struggling. That's way more powerful than just saying Joe was finding it hard to write. So of the two, just think about which one allowed you to see Joe's struggle unfolding behind your eyes, and which one made you actually feel something for Joe. Like, we can all relate to feeling like you want to bang your head on the desk because you're so frustrated, and this feeling that your Google Doc's taunting you because you've spent the last 2 hours staring at the wall. This episode is brought to you in partnership with ActiveCampaign. If you've been listening to the show for some time, you'll know how obsessed I am with email marketing. It's why I'm a huge fan of ActiveCampaign. It's an email marketing platform that lets you create email automations without getting tangled up in confusing if-then process flows. It uses a super intuitive visual system so you can seamlessly build email campaigns in minutes. Just map out your flow, drop in your copy, and you're good to go. If you're looking for email marketing software that's so simple your grandma could use it, make sure you check out ActiveCampaign. Head over to www.wordistry.co.uk/partners and click on the button marked Check Out ActiveCampaign Now. So that's the power of showing versus telling, and it's something you should aim to do as much as possible when you're writing emails. Make them come alive with colourful, specific details so your reader can enter the story and become the hero themselves. And this is how you create a better experience for your reader and boost your email engagement rates. And thirdly, the third technique that I want to share with you today is to play around with interesting word choices and language. So one of my favourite websites where I absolutely nerd out for hours each day on language is thesaurus.com. And as you can probably tell from the name, it's an online thesaurus where you can power up your word choices and give your email copy an instant lift. Now, often when we're writing email copy, all we want to do is get the job done. Trouble is, this tends to lead to lazy word choices, and lazy word choices are also often boring word choices. So what do I mean by that? Well, when you're in a hurry, it's unlikely that you're going to sit and sort of flick through all different word choices. You're probably going to choose the first words that spring to mind. And these are the kind of ho-hum words that everyone else chooses as well, because they're the most common. They roll off the tongue like meatballs off the table. You know, words like nice. Has there ever been a more mundane word than the word nice? Probably not. And in fact, if your English teacher was anything like mine, she banned us from ever using the words nice and good because they were so completely boring. In fact, she gave it a level 100 on the blah scale. So if you want to inject more personality and more pizzazz into your emails, stop yourself before a single one of these wimp words manages to attach itself to your page, and then replace it with power words or a series of words that express the same meaning, just in a way that's more unique to you and more impactful. So how can you improve a wimp word like nice? So first of all, you could use a simile. So instead of saying Trevor was nice, you could say Trevor was nice as a pink doily in Granny's conservatory. Pink doilies are kind of you know, inoffensive, and especially if they're in Granny's house. So that's the kind of impression that we're trying to convey about Trevor. He was just a nice guy. So when it comes to using similes, I would urge caution. What you don't want to do is borrow similes that your audience has already heard and probably ignored 1,000 times before. Ones like black as soot, cold as ice. These are so common that they've basically lost all their power. And the key here is to make up your own. So your reader has to make the connection and actually visualize what you're describing. And this again comes back to the whole show, don't tell thing. You're allowing your reader to visualize niceness in a way that is unique that they've never heard before, which has much more power than just saying as nice as pie, for example, which everybody says, and it's kind of boring. So the second way that you can power up your word choices is you can throw your adjectives completely in the bin. Now, a few weeks ago, I actually got into an argument with my 7-year-old teacher about the use of adjectives and adverbs. And if you don't know what an adjective and an adverb is, don't worry, my husband has no idea either. These are words that help to describe either a verb or a noun. So they give more colour to describing an object or an action. Now, I told my daughter to avoid them wherever possible and to instead use power verbs or power nouns to express the same idea. Turns out that that wasn't really a very helpful lesson for mummy when year two was trying to learn about parts of speech. Describing words do have their place, but they're often actually a sign that you've settled for a lazy word. So for example, you could say, it was a nice meal. And it's okay, it kind of gets the message across, but you could swap out the word meal for a different word with more of the energy that you're looking for to convey niceness or joy. So something like feast or fiesta or blowout, which gives that kind of impression of fun and niceness, but in a single word rather than having to add colour to a boring noun. And the third way that you can liven up your word choice is you could even make up words. So my children adore a science podcast called Wow in the World. And if you have small children, it's a show that I'd highly recommend for little ones. And I can link to that in the show notes for you if that's something that you would be interested in listening to. One of the hosts uses a series of expressions that my children can't get enough of. It absolutely has them in fits of hysterics every single time. One of those expressions is bonkerballs. And if you listen to the show, it's kind of a bit silly. It describes itself as an audio comic. It's meant to be very tongue-in-cheek and kind of bring some light and some fun to science. And the word bonkerballs is, it's a bit silly, but my kids love it. And they keep saying it to each other all the time. And what's great about it is that it's completely on brand for this particular podcast, and it's totally unique to them because they've made up the word. And there are lots of opportunities for you to modify existing words or to create completely new ones that will allow you to brighten up your email copy. Finally, this one's a super easy one to implement, but this strategy is a great way for you to end your email on a memorable note that will make your subscribers smile before you say goodbye. And that is to work on your sign off. So for most email writers, the way they sign off their email is kind of an afterthought. And while most business owners have evolved beyond saying yours sincerely or yours faithfully at the end of their message, or even worse, best, it's likely they've chosen something equally bland and generic to say goodbye. So don't forget, you want to leave a lasting impression on your reader. If you sign off every email with a beige goodbye, like see you later or until next time, which I have to admit I was guilty of until not that long ago, it's a bit like when you listen to an amazing song on the radio and the song ends by fading out. This is the most lazy and low impact way for a song to end. But if you compare that to a song like, say, Song 2 by Blur, if you listen to it, the ending was so abrupt that it was almost jarring. And what it did was it kind of woke you up at the end, and the ending was surprising, which made it much more memorable than if they just faded out the audio track. So it's the same with your email. Do you want your email to fade out like a reality TV career? Or do you want it to end with a bang, or at least with a chuckle or a smile for the person reading your email? So what you should do is try to mix up the way that you close out your email. So inject a bit of personality into your parting words so you leave your reader smiling, bewildered, inspired, or even angry. At least make them feel something as you say goodbye. The best place for you to go for some sign-off inspiration is Justin Blackman's homepage. If you jump on there, he has a free download where you can get 93 comedy goodbyes that you can borrow or play with in your own emails. So I'll link to that again in the show notes so you can grab a copy and instantly add some vim to the end of your emails. Now, the reality is, being lifeless over email, it's a choice. It's not a given. Even if you've jumped from the grey suity corporate world into the murky underbelly of online business. Now, I can forgive you for your writing sins. We've all been there. But the reality is, learning how to undo all of that corporate brainwashing, it's not going to come about with a quick fix or a magic wand. It takes time to figure out how you want to sound. And it's also going to take time for you to learn how to execute it and actually make your written words sound like you. But the truth is, once you crack the code, you're going to start to see higher open, click and conversion rates on your emails. And it's what's going to allow you to join the coveted A pile in your prospect's inbox. So I hope you enjoyed what I shared with you in this week's episode of the Conversion Choreography Show. If you enjoyed what I shared today, make sure you hit the subscribe button so you can receive instant downloads to your favorite device each time I release a brand new episode. You can also download a free copy of my Story Generator ebook, where I share tips and strategies, plus a practical step-by-step exercise to help you uncover high-impact stories you can share with your list to start to inject a bit more of your personality into your emails. All you need to do is visit www.wordistry.co.uk and you can grab your copy right off the homepage. So I hope you enjoyed the show and I will catch you again next week. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Conversion Choreography Show. If you did, then make sure you hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode on your favourite device. You can also subscribe to receive email updates direct to your inbox if you head over to my website at www.wordistry.co.uk.